Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2844 is the result of a couple of years' effort by the legislature and others. Years ago, the inspection requirements for elevators were changed. It was a negative impact on the small grain elevators across the state, and then some of the churches that have infrequent use were also concerned about the fees and the inspections that was required a couple years ago. So last year we did an exemption for those facilities and asked the department to spend the interim with looking at it through a study group of affected stakeholders work out resolution to the problem of the inspection and the fees. And that group met a number of times, and this is a result of that effort. I think we have a resolution that will be satisfactory for everyone involved, and I'm here with Mr. Joe Akam from the department, who worked a number of meetings and other conversations with these stakeholders to walk you through a little bit of what this work the study group did.
Joe Akam, thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joe Akam, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. As Senator Tuskoy mentioned, we met three times with each of the committees. We had a church committee and a grain and feed mill association committee to discuss the parameters of what was being looked at, what needed to be done, and how we could correct the language. So the language before you does the following things. First, it clarifies, we discussed with all of the industry groups, the elevator industry and the grain and feed mill association and churches, we inadvertently last year in the language eliminated all new inspections, but where we located the language. So to correct that, this bill does that. We're deleting out sections 2 and 3 of the first part of the bill, so that would make it sure it's installed correctly. Permits are pulled for any new installations of any of these devices. The second piece of the bill, we established 3 timelines for inspections. We removed the hand-powered man lifts and the electric endless belt lifts, which are one-person belt lifts in the grain elevators and feed mills, from the periodic inspection requirements of the department, because they fall under the OSHA regulations and they are inspected by OSHA, and our OSHA staff can call us in if there's a safety concern of those when they go in and make investigations in the grain and feed mills. So we divided it up into 3 levels. A third level is the 5-year inspection criteria for the special purpose and elevators that are in the grain and feed mills and other devices. 3 years on the churches without any attached school facilities. And the church committee had a number of churches in rural Minnesota that have a platform wheelchair lift that's used once on Sunday, and they felt that they didn't need to have the full-time inspections as we do in a escalator that's used every day or a high-rise building where the elevator is used every day. So we broke those out into a 3-year inspection timeline, and all the other devices, 1-year inspection timeline. We established the $100 operating fee for all of them to remain the same, and then we established in law that the hand-powered man lifts and the electric belt lifts are exempt from the subsequent periodic inspections. They are subject to the first annual operating fee, so we can register the device and keep them on record, and if we have any recalls or anything, we can at least send out notices to all of them if there something happens with those devices down the line. That's basically what the bill does, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Mr. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Joe Akam, why once a year? I mean, members, I think we're going to have a discussion about some reforms in government and this whole regulatory environment we have. And I'm just wondering, is there some reason? I mean, it's once a year because it's always been once a year. Is there a reason it's not once every 3 years? I mean, Have we talked about that? Is 12 months the right time frame? Mr. Joachim, any thought on that?
Mr.
Chair, Senator, yes, we patterned our inspection process after the national model standards. These are recommendations by the manufacturers themselves on when they want their devices inspected. So we looked at the national model standards and said, actually, a lot of them say 6 months. And we went to 1 year, said, okay, 1 year we think is enough to do these. And that's when the committee looked at these devices with the low-end use. We said we can go 3 years on the types of devices in the small churches on 3 years, and then these special purpose elevators that are in the grain elevators that carry more than one person, we can go to 5 year on those because, again, they have limited use. So we've tried to address that in this bill, Senator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just think, you know, I'm getting a lot of pushback on my idea of expending the sales tax to clothing because it's such a radical departure from current policy. We're going to be looking at a lot of things this time next year. You know, this billion-dollar problem, you know, we're going to figure that out, I guess, or if we don't, the governor's going to. But, you know, this time next year, things are going to have to change, and we're going to have to kind of assess how much duplication is there that maybe we need to take a look at. I just don't believe we're going to keep doing things because that's how we've always done them. We can't afford to do that any longer. And I'm just not sure. Little thing is this.
It's Senator Bach is right. It's an example of something. You know, I mean, there's probably thousands of these things hanging out there. Why do you do it? Well, it's always been done that way. And I'm not sure it just pertains to this one, but that's a good thought that we have to start looking at these things. And quite frankly, how could we do more with less, you know, in so many areas? And Senator Scheidt?
Mr. Chairman, I used to know more about elevators and vertical transportation, but I'm guessing, because I know that people who install elevators also often do have service contracts on those elevators, and I don't know what they recommend for service. You know, I suppose you could argue that they recommend it just really depends on the usage and the amount of usage, I think, that these elevators get, and escalators, because you often see one or the other it must have malfunctioned or it's not working, and you know, especially when you're in a big retail environment and the public is using them a lot, like continuously through the day or evening. So, you know, Senator Bach, I don't disagree that we, you know, we probably need to change how we do things, but I'm guessing that it has to do with, could you tie it to higher usage? You know, and you actually have done that by your different categories about churches. That don't have attached school, that's every 3 years, and the special purpose one every five. So you've already done that to some degree. I don't know if it makes sense if you could really do it more with the other kind of elevators, but I know there's an issue. I know that services, it needs to be regular, and so you need to see, and to cut back on costs, it's possible that some businesses just don't do the service like as often as they should.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
you
know, Senator Scheidt kind of hit on my point. Maybe I didn't articulate that very well, but I know people that are elevator constructors, we call them. They do routine maintenance on these things. It just seems like they ought to be able to certify that an elevator is in operable condition, and we shouldn't have to send the state $100 to figure that out when the people that actually are there doing the on-site maintenance, making sure that they operate safely, ultimately are the ones that could certify that it's in the correct operating condition, and that why we send $100 to the state to do it every year. I don't know how many there are in the state, but you know, it's a small thing, but it's just something more symbolic than anything else, I guess, but the kind of discussions I think we're going to have.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do agree with Senator Bach, and I think to think that it's the state's responsibility puts a burden on the state that perhaps we can no longer accept. And if, in fact, those companies that manufacture and oversee elevators aren't getting their job done, then they ought to lose their ability to operate in Minnesota. And then in particular, I take objection to line number 2.18. I almost have to laugh. It seems so parochial to me, given, you know, somebody who, you know, I'm Jewish. We don't go to churches. We use synagogues. And I think, oh, my gosh, we're going to put in law an exception for an elevator within a church? I mean, where does that come from? Why would we identify a religious institution by name? Does this not, you know, does this count for synagogues? Does this count for, you know? I think the intent must have been usage. And I think that if there's two really subjects to discuss here. Number one, should the state have this accountability? And I don't have an answer to that. But number two, if what we're trying to do is identify a framework according to usage, we ought to do that. And so I don't think we ought to have that kind of language in a bill.
Very appropriate observation, I think, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, where that came from is the House attached an amendment to my elevator bill last year. That's where it came from.
Well, that's why it's there. I understand it now. Senator Bonoff, now we get it, don't we? It came from the House. I think we should fix that up, though, before the day is over. Senator, Mr. Joachim on that issue?
Mr. Chair, committee members, two committees wrestled with that term, trying to figure out what term could we use, and nobody could really come up with another term. So we continue with the term that was in last year's legislation to match up with that.
Well,
so
we're going
to
change the
better
term. We're going to change the term somehow.
Sure, willing to go work with that.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and kind of sticking to that theme, and I appreciate your work that you did with that church work group or whatever we're going to call that, and moving that to 3 years. In those discussions, though, in some of these very small rural churches, you know that they need to have a dedicated phone line inside each elevator. Was that ever brought up, or is there anything that we can do to kind of help that along, too, kind of with what Senator Bach said, too? In some of these small rural churches with maybe 40 members, and that one member rides the elevator Sunday morning.
It'll be everybody out of business.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, the question comes up in regard to the elevator code requires that you have a call button inside the device and a dedicated phone line. And one of the pastors on our committee said, my phone line went down, and he said, I was trapped in my elevator until somebody came into the church because I'm the only one in the church. And he said, so I could push that button all day long, and nobody's going to hear the button alarm. But he said the dedicated phone line is what is going to save somebody, and especially in the greater Minnesota where all they have, there's nobody there to be with him the rest of the day in the church. So he said, I could have been trapped there all day long until somebody came into the church.
Got to take a sandwich with you and a bottle of water.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparksy.
I understand that, but I think now, I mean, if you look around the table, maybe not everyone has their cell phone with them, but I think just with the things that have changed a little bit. I mean, I understand the safety issue that goes along with it. But, again, in some of these really small churches, that dedicated phone line does have some cost to go with it. So.
Commercial line.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Tsukoya.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my original intent was to exempt these facilities from the inspections. I did attend one of the committee meetings, and I have a better understanding of the complexity of just exempting them. I think the committee did work pretty hard, and I understand that we'll have to make some changes with regard to the language on that one part, but it was challenging to get this far, and I'm here hoping that we're able to move this bill forward because I know the Grain Elevator Association would like to not be subject to the annual permit and the annual fee, and with the usage that they have, we thought that this was a pretty reasonable compromise.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, so notwithstanding the other concerns being raised here, which I think are valid, but understanding your intent, I might suggest an oral amendment on line 2.18, strike a church and say, insert a house of worship.
Very good.
That's good.
Can I incorporate that, Mr. Chair? Or do you want to?
Well, Senator Bonner is going to move it.
Okay.
If that's all right with you.
That'll be
on
fine.
That motion. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. It's in the bill now, Senator.
Thank you.
Perry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Joe Akam, just for clarification, how many elevators in the state and how many man hours do we put in inspecting?
Inspecting them?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joe Akam.
Senator. We started this maintenance program in January of 2007. We estimate we have about 15,000 existing elevators in Minnesota, probably a little less now if we exempt out.
Is that an up and down number?
Yes, yes. 500.
Oh, that was bad.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
You guys are slow.
It was a spaghetti, I think.
It's a spaghetti I had for lunch.
We employ approximately 12 elevator inspectors. Five of those are handling new inspections, and seven are handling the existing elevator inspections.
Senator Scheid. Hi.
Mr. Chairman, hello.
This has been an uplifting discussion.
It's had its ups and downs, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, what are we doing here? Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File number 2844, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor.
Further discussion? Anybody in the audience wish to speak for or against the bill? On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is your re-election bill, or
it is.
These are important to lots of people, and I didn't mean that to. Senator Saltzman has it. Which order is the way they're down here? Senate File 2928?
I believe so, Mr. Chair. That
whatever
is
way you
the
okay.
Department of Labor and Industry bill, and if we could start with that, that would be really, really
very
good.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I am here with Mr. Joe Akam with the Department of Labor and Industry Department bill, and I do want to note that this is coming from the department, and a lot of it where it is a fairly a lengthy bill. It is a lot of cleanup language and trying to put things into compliance. And so I'd like to first start out with, I believe it's the A-10 amendment. If I may move that.
We have accidents and oh my God.
Senator. All right, the amendment's being distributed. Senator Saltzman.
There, thank you very much. As I mentioned, if we could maybe move the A-10 amendment first, Mr. Chair, it's an author's amendment.
Well, and you're, as a member of the committee, you're moving that?
I am, please.
All right, members, does everyone have the A-10? Discussion on the A-10 amendment. Senator Saltzman's moved the A-10. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment's adopted.
Very good.
Senator Saltzman.
So just a brief summary. It's called the Department of Labor and Industry sort of cleanup bill is that it is a combination of cleanup language from the construction codes and licensing divisions and also labor standards and apprenticeships. They have been reviewed by various parties, and we believe that there is general consensus on these proposed changes. And I'll let Mr. Joachim go through it. It is a lot of clarifying language, bringing up to date, language changes that are consistent with the federal legislation. It removes outdated language. Clarifies adopting code standards, addresses electronic access for new codes for cities, defines penalties, clears up the term apprentice now as an unlicensed individual. It adds definition. There's a lot of good things in this bill, but we do not believe that they are controversial. So with that, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Joachim could go through the bill, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Joachim, welcome again.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. I have a little lengthier summary if you'd like me to walk through it. Or would you rather just stand for questions?
Well, Mr. Joachim, why don't you hit the highlights?
Okay, I can do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm going to start with I'll start with page one of the bill. One of the things we're trying to do in our rulemaking process, Mr. Chair and committee members, is to use more of the electronic mail address, and this just clarifies that provision in the law so that we're allowed to do this and people can register with us so they can either register with us to get it electronically or they want it a hard copy mailed to them, excuse me. Pages 2, 3, 4, and 5, most of 5, deal with labor standards and clearing up definitions that are in the federal standards. And if you notice on page 3, we're line 315, we're trying to match it up with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 29, Part 29, and all of these terms match up with the federal regulations, so we fall in line with those criteria. Page 4, in our apprenticeship program, lines 418 through 425, we've now established 3 avenues for apprentices to gain their hours. One is time-based, one is competency-based through a test or apprenticeship online job training, and then there's a hybrid approach that they can apply for their apprenticeship program. Page 5, we're on 519, we're deleting out some old reference standards date for on the dedicated fund that our construction codes and licensing unit is in. Page 6 has more deletions than additions, really just changing the areas that the state building official who manages the construction codes and licensing unit is responsible to send a copy of the new adopted codes to all the jurisdictions. This just says we can send them an electronic copy or make an electronic copy available, and we'll send them a copy if they request a copy. Talks about the consultation on 617, 616, 17 is the consultation with the commissioner for hearings. Before we consolidated, the commissioner was charged to coordinate all of the codes that were adopted. Now that they're all consolidated with the construction codes and licensing unit at Department of Labor and Industry, we no longer have to deal with the consultation of these hearings. Page 7, lines 722 and 723, we have a process in the building code process, whereas if a contractor appeals a decision of the local code official, they can appeal it to the local board of appeals. A lot of communities, smaller communities specifically, do not have a local board of appeals, so we have a state level appeals board. This just clarifies in law that a final decision either comes through the local board of appeals or the state level appeals board, so it's very clear how that process works. Page 8 and 9, top of page 9 clarifies in law. We already have it in law that it's a violation of our enforcement tools if you do not send in the reports, but it seems that communities were not following through with that, so we just wanted to put it in law, make it very clear that they are subject to penalty if they don't follow through and submit their report. Page 9, lines 9-7 through 9-12, we have been required to submit an annual report on November 30th of each year addressing our surcharge fees and dollars that we generate from those fees. That is the same report that we do every 2 years when we submit our budget, so we're just asking to have it removed from the every year submittal and submit it only when we do our budget. Rest of page 9, 10, 11, and 12 start out with some contractor licensing requirements. On the bottom of page 12, you'll see we've added a definition of owner to include the condominium or townhouse provisions. On the next page, you'll see we've addressed who that who's responsible for payment and their license, how much they can we can pay out per licensee, which is $75,000. I think the next big change is on page 16, which is lines 1612 through 1625. And the amendment, we actually amended this section, but I'll go through what the amendment does. We had a concern, and a lot of residential building contractors build multifamily housing, and their license subjects that multifamily housing to the contractor recovery fund. However, it was very, very vague. If I was the owner of a condo and I could put in a claim against the builder for what was inside my condo, but if the roof leaked on the condo, we weren't sure if the association, if we could put in a condo association could put in a claim against the contractors. So this clears that up, that the association can put in a claim underneath the contractor recovery fund. On the bottom of page 16, the felony language was removed per our amendment. And page 17 is talking about the recovery of payments. Just clarifies, it's already in law, but it just clarifies that in order for us to make a payment after the homeowner gets a judgment, they have to give us the information before we make the payment. We were making payments before we got the information, and it was tough to get information out of them after we made a payment. So we just needed to clean that up. And then last part of page 17 is the repealing the various sections. One of the sections that we repealed was in 299G, which is a state fire marshal's law. There was a provision in there for safety glazing, and that safety glazing law has been outdated by about 15, 20 years, and reference standards that are outdated at least that long. The current safety glazing requirements that are equal to or greater than these provisions in law are currently in the state building code and the state fire code, so we do not need this section in law to address safety glazing anywhere in Minnesota anymore. That's a quick overview of the bill.
Mr. Joe Akam, on the, I guess on the A10, the very last section, you talk about an effective date, and you list it as everything is effective the day following enactment. Do you have a, it's obviously as fast as we can possibly do it, and you're covering a lot of sections of law here. Is there a reason for speed? That much speed?
Mr. Chair,
I'm looking at section 41.
So what line would that be, Mr. Chair?
41A10 amendment, so it's line 610 on the sixth page of the A10 amendment. Effective date.
Mr. Chair, I can't comment on that one. I'd have to, maybe John can. Our attorneys wrote that, so Mr. Chair, so I'm not sure why that date was put in there.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rutkowski, you want to identify yourself for the record?
John Rutkowski with the Department of Labor and Industry.
Mr. Rutkowski.
To your question, why would this bill be enacted the day following the governor's signature? Is that your question?
Kind of. Are you looking at the language I'm looking at?
610.
So the effective date, you have it listed as effective the day following final enactment. So that's as quick as the state legislature can humanly move. And you're changing a lot of sections of law here. And we were just wondering, are there some people who are going to need a little more notice?
Mr. Chairman, since I've been at the Department of Labor and Industry, the day following final enactment is pretty common. I suspect it has to do with code compliance so that everybody's complying with code immediately. But that's just speculation. I'll have to get back to the attorneys.
Mr. Fuller, do you want to add any perspective on effective dates?
Mr. Chairman, members, ordinarily by general law, it's effective August 1, and the reason for that is so the public can be cognizant of what we've done and administrative changes, forms, whatever can be done. So it's extraordinary if you do it immediately, the reason being that you don't want to be the person in a position of violating the law with no chance to comply. So I would be surprised if there's something in here that doesn't require an individual to do something that they won't know about the day following filing.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Tomazoni.
Mr. Chairman.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, it just dawned on me why we wanted it that.
Okay.
We could limit that. Our labor standards director, if you pardon me, the microphone. In the beginning of the bill, there's several references to the state apprenticeship program, and she's the one who requested the day following enactment because these are federal conformity language changes to the U.S. Department of Labor, and the department is several months. These were enacted, I believe, last October. So that's why we have that request in there. So the day following enactment should only pertain to those sections in the bill that are related to the apprenticeship program.
Mr. Chair, 2 through 7 then would handle that.
Senator Tomazoni.
Yeah, because just on this last page here, on page 6,
right.
Section 39 says it's effective August 1st, 2010. And then on the spot where you questioned, Mr. Chairman, it says Section 41, the effective date, and then it says Sections 1 through 40, and I don't think we have 40 sections. I think we only
we've
have
skipped one.
We have, so maybe that should be. So I don't know what Section 39 is supposed to say. And then I would assume that Section 41 should be Section 40, but I'm not sure if that's maybe Mr. Fuller knows what's going on here. I don't.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Senator Tomazoni, I can speak to line to Section 39. The House of Representatives, I believe 2 weeks ago, passed. And the governor signed into law Chapter 183. This was Senator Scheid's bill from last year. Can't remember the number offhand, but the House file was 927. And so they're changing this effective date. I believe, Mr. Joachim, that has to do with the medical gas
registration.
So this amendment attempts to be in sync with Chapter Law 183. That the House did not pass Senator Scheid's bill last year.
Mr. Rakowski, Mr. Chairman, the section, line 6.9 then says that sections 1 through 40 are effective immediately following enactment, and section 39 is right above it, which has a different enactment. So it would seem to me that section 41 would probably be the one that would take precedence here. So it seems like they're both in conflict with each other. So I don't know which one is right.
Well, Senator Tomazoni, while they are discussing, I think what they're trying to argue is that Section 39, as written, is what they're comfortable with. One thing we could do is we could delete Section 41, which has that immediate.
Or put the sections in that you want immediate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 2 through 7.
And then we could have them come back with the 2 through 7.
Yeah.
Although, frankly, Mr. Rakowski, you might want to. Sounds like you might want to double check.
No, Mr. Chairman, I
Mr.
feel
Rakowski.
I feel comfortable.
Sections 2 through 7 are effective today.
Senator Salton.
So perhaps I'd like to move that on line 6.10 of the amended language that it reads sections 2 through 7 are effective the day following final enactment. And on 6.9, change section 41 to section to just section 40.
On that, Senator Saltzman. Mr. Fuller thinks that actually we could keep that as section 41. Let's give him a second here. Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, what's ordinary in time like this is just to put an instruction at the bottom that says of the amendment, renumber the sections in order and correct internal section references. So I would recommend that just because of the late arrival of the sort of long amendment. Do it right. And then in our own engrossing department, they'll fix it up, the committee report.
So members can follow this then.
It is already there. Oh, it's already there.
So, we're set. So, Mr. Fuller, so members can follow this. Could you repeat the amendment language that Senator Saltzman has now given us?
Mr. Chairman, members, on line 6.10 on the A10 amendment, delete the 1 to 40 and insert 2 to 7. And then underneath that, that language I suggested is already there, so we're fine otherwise.
All right, members understand what we're doing here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Other than Senator Sparks? Good. Senator Saltzman moves her oral amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Thank you for catching that, Mr. Fuller and Mr. Joachim and Mr. Rakowski.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question that reached out and kind of grabbed my attention. It's on of the bill itself, and I don't think it was taken out. I could be wrong, though, I suppose. On page 8 of the original bill, up at the top, that building certificates validly issued before July 1, 1972. I just wondered what that's about and why you've stricken that other language. I am assuming that they're completed by now, but is that what does that pertain to?
Mr. Joachim?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid. When the state building code was originally put in law on July 1st, 1972, this was needed so that any building permits that were out there or certificates of occupancies that were issued prior to that date remained in effect. We're pretty sure that all the permits that were issued at that time are completed by now, so we thought we could just take out that language that doesn't mean anything anymore and just include the language that the certificate of occupancy still remains in effect if that building hasn't been changed since 1972.
Are there any members of the audience who'd like to testify or offer opinion on Senate File 2928 as amended by the committee?
Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. One thing that jumps out at me, Mr. Drake, on page 16, what is the felony for? I'm reading it, but I'm not exactly sure what the felony is for.
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, that's been deleted with the amended part of the bill.
All right.
What we were attempting to do was it's a felony for the builder if they don't respond. We were attempting to add it in as a felony for the homeowner, but we found some opposition to that, so we're not going to add that language in.
Further discussion, members? Okay. Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Saltzman. She's on the committee.
I know
she
is.
I'll move it if you want me to.
Senator Murphy. Well, I was just trying to involve everyone here.
I just got back in here, Mr. Chairman, and I heard your voice, and I was looking over at your spot over there, and there you are. It's Mr. Chairman now. So. Like a promotion.
Not for too long, though.
Yeah, we almost got a bill done. All right, Senator Saltzman moves that Senate File 2928 as amended be recommended to pass, and we have a request for it to go to state and local. Mm-hmm. State and local government committee. You all right with that, Senator Saltzman?
Yes. I also have a, I believe, judiciary. So we'll go to state and local first, Mr. Chair.
You don't want to go there.
Well, we were working on trying to avoid that, but we'll see.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Bill's passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman, you want to go next to Senate File 2310?
I would, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2310 came to me from the Small Business Caucus that was put together in the House, and it really fits together nicely with the bill we heard last week about how are we really responding on a fairly immediate basis when we hear about businesses that are either looking to come to the state or are leaving the state. And Senator Rosen and I attended a panel discussion with Precision Manufacturers just in the few weeks before session started, and we really had a lot of discussion in talking with these small manufacturers about how companies are looking at Iowa, Wisconsin, our border states. And it's not just an issue of the economic development tools, but it's also an issue of some of the processes that they have to go to in terms of the costs and delays required to start a typical small business in Minnesota. I know that Senator Bach just noted this as we heard Senator Skoy's bill about regulations. And so in looking at this, this is a comparative study of state regulation affecting small business startups. And it is a study that would examine the typical costs and delays required by our regulations in two states. And I would, suggest if Senator Rosen would like to amend this to include Iowa as well, because I know that that is, has been an issue with her. To start a small business, a small retail business, a manufacturing business, and they must choose a specific type of business and then follow the startup processes in two states. This appropriation, which is not noted yet, would go to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and they shall choose a recipient from among our higher education institutes to do this study. And this is really a way that I think that we could be working with our graduate schools, both at our state colleges and universities. Our private colleges have excellent schools, and how we use our young people to really study the processes that are going on to and come back again, so that we are better educated about what are some of these barriers that our businesses are encountering. So that's the bill, essentially. It really works sort of with this whole idea of what kind of tools do we need, what kind of restrictions do we have that are preventing businesses from growing to their maximum capacity. But we also want to be responsible and have responsible growth. But sometimes we can't fix things if we're not aware that they're a problem. And so this is a way for us to, again, work with our colleges and universities for them to help us put together a report on this particular topic.
Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saltzman, I am a supporter of this bill. I think it is important, and I keep hearing anecdotal stories about, a corporation was looking at expanding here, a small business was looking at starting here, starting in a different state. And so just a couple of questions. One, would you consider looking at all the border states? I mean, we're always hearing about what's happening in North Dakota. That right now, and South Dakota, that they're luring businesses to come to their states. And then, in addition, I'm just wondering if the more appropriate study, because we're competing with, Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, is the more appropriate study to be looking at a comparative analysis of Minnesota versus the nation rather than identifying one state or another? What's your view on that?
Great.
Senator Saltzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think that that's an excellent idea. I think we were thinking to start small, and that immediately we have Wisconsin we're talking about, but I'm not close to Iowa, although I am a Hawkeye. But, for Senator Rosen, she does have businesses in her area where, that's their biggest competition. I'm sure that in the western states we do have some areas where, we're trying to compete as well. So, I'd be very open to amending this to include our border states if we believe that that's something, again, that I think would be helpful. Some of the other things that we did ask DEED to do in the previous bill was to also come to us with some of the tools that they would like to be able to have or could use, and I think that they might have a better idea of some of those because they are competing, because they're out there going across the country and talking with businesses, or when businesses here are being lured to other states. But this is to look at some of the regulatory issues, more so than the economic development tools that are going on. I know, Senator Rosen, you spoke about some of the things that you've seen that are online, some of the one-stop shop. I know, Senator Bonham, if you have that bill, I think, as well, that is looking at how do we make this easier for businesses to access those kinds of requirements. Is there a way that we can do this, and are there things that are barriers, and are we losing jobs because of them? So those are some of the points.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman. I just would mention, and I'll leave this entirely up to you, but if you are going to expand the bill, then I would be also asking to look at the Dakotas. But if you want to start with just Wisconsin, I'm fine with that. But if you are going to expand it, then I think you should consider that.
Absolutely.
Also.
But they're border state center, right? So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tavassoni.
Mr. Chairman, so you're a Hawkeye also? Because I think we have three senators from Iowa. Makes me think people are moving into this state, not moving out.
We'll study that too.
Try to keep them out.
No offense.
Who are they?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saltzman, I think you're right on with all of this, and very much in favor of expanding it to the surrounding states. Our competition, it doesn't really matter where you go. We're always there's always an onslaught coming from us from all directions. And I think this is a really good start, and I'm just reading through this again, and my wheels are turning, and I'm thinking about page 1, line 14, the study must choose a specific type of business and follow the startup process in the two states. And I'm just wondering why we have to keep it to a specific type of business. Perhaps we could keep it a little more broad if we wanted to say, I know you've kind of geared it towards manufacturing, but maybe something in the bioscience area that is very broad, whether it's agricultural, medical devices, or manufacturing. And then my thought, and using the higher ed is just a wonderful part of this whole equation.
I haven't done that for a while.
And I think the follow-through, if perhaps we could talk about this later, the follow-through on the responsibility of the higher ed to start gearing up their higher curriculum, the curriculum that's required for these industry. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a great start, but, boy, we can just springboard off this so well. Sure. You can springboard off this, but I can help you think this through.
Senator Letts,
did you have a response? Comment on that, perhaps, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, first of all, I would like to offer an amendment to add after line 1.10 a comma and then add Iowa, comma, North Dakota, comma, South Dakota, comma, and Wisconsin so that it is our border states. I'd like to do that, and then I would like to respond.
And on 1.113, you'll have to put 1, 2, 3,
right.
4 states?
2, 4.
I think we have
where it says
4 states, right? Yeah. And then we would also have to add. Is it just a two-state study,
five.
Right? And so.
1.13 would have to be 5.
1.13. Mm-hmm.
Yep, 5.
And then went right, yeah. And to change in the 5 states. And the point, the part about the specific business, I think they want the studies to compare like businesses. So if they were doing studies, if this went, you know, could be expanded, it would be that you were comparing a bioscience to a bioscience versus a manufacturing to a small retail. So that however the study is done. So if we need to clarify that, must study like businesses or must study similar businesses, similar sector businesses.
Mm-hmm. Similar
would
sector.
That be helpful?
Similar, yeah.
John.
So if I could add to that amendment, Mr. Chair, on 1.14, the study must choose. And then after that, strike A, must choose to study similar, and then strike specific, similar type of, and then businesses is plural, and follow the startup process in the 5 states from beginning to end.
We've got members, I think, they follow that on 115, similar.
Mm-hmm. To say similar.
Types, plural.
Types of businesses.
Plural businesses. Okay, I think that's the intent that we like. we have that. Senator Latz, do you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A comment and a question. One is certainly these issues are important, and this is, I think, a good thing to study. But we do have a net inflow of population into Minnesota, including, I think, flowing from Iowa and North and South Dakota. So we must be doing something right in growing businesses and jobs in Minnesota. And I think if we probably took a look at some of the jobs that are created along the borders outside of Minnesota, they might not be the best jobs, the lower paying, the fewer benefits kind of jobs, where maybe they're looking only at some of their bare bones costs and not really at a business climate kind of question. But the study will, I guess, help us flesh some of that out. Maybe the study should look at some of those issues too, and not just the regulatory barriers that might be involved. Because I mean, we make a lot of investments in this state that are attracting businesses and people here. Otherwise, they wouldn't be projecting the dramatic growth in the state population, at, certainly not in the metro area. But the other comment, I guess, is there's a blank appropriation here, and I'm wondering if you have any ideas as to where that money is going to come from.
Right.
Because if we just expanded this to five states instead of two states, that's going to increase the cost of the study possibly quite substantially, because now you're looking at five states' laws and regulations. And
pretty soon I'm going to give my speech, but I will in a minute.
I know this is not within our jurisdiction specifically, Mr. Chairman.
Let me just say it. I get every time we, you know, can't we direct a college or can't, you know, that we all pay for, the taxpayers, just say do something? Every time we do something, we have to have 250 grand or 400,000. I mean, you know, I say this about twice a week, as you guys know, but sure, we'll go to five, or let's go to 20 states, and we'll add 2 million, you know. But, I mean, can't we just tell the campuses or some of the professors or somebody, study this stuff, or am I, you know.
Well, that point,
and how many millions
Chair,
of dollars we put into you and Mitsky and all that, you know, but, okay. I haven't done until the next time we get on this, something like this.
I am frustrated because I know that.
Say, speaking of, you see how conservative I am?
We did
fiscally
try to reach out to some of the departments because we are funding them, and we do have wonderful business schools in this state, excellent business schools. And I have tried to reach out to them to work on some of these initiatives, and we've had some problems. Now, right, we're in the middle of session. I'm getting calls from students who want to talk to me, and they want to study some of these things, and they want a couple hours to sit down and talk. And I thought, what a great study this could be for them. This would really be such a wonderful learning experience for them. And it is about growing jobs in Minnesota. What kind of policy? So I've tried to educate our business education community that being part of the legislative process can be really important for them, because this is where we set some of these policies that then later on they will say are not helping or are helping our economy and growing jobs. So I think I would like to be able to work with our colleges and universities, both our public and private, and is there private funding for some of this? Because I absolutely realize, you know, we are cutting right now, and if we have to, you know, invest in other things, and we're cutting even deeper from other areas. So we do want to continue to work to see if we can find a way to fund this. So, Mr. Chair, I share with you your thoughts.
Yeah, just Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's great to get the universities involved in this. I frankly, I'd get nervous about at least some sources of private funding, at least creating the perception that the results might not be unbiased. But I can't imagine why this wouldn't be a great master's thesis for someone to do, or a PhD thesis, or something a professor could undertake in the ordinary course of their research. You know, they got all these institutes. The Center for Transportation Studies does a whole bunch of stuff over there that we don't pay for study by study, but we get their reports, and they're very helpful. It seems to me this is a natural kind of stuff that could be done in that regard without us having to throw money into it as well. And I raise the question also because all of us here probably have people coming to us and ideas that we'd like to get funded to do or avoid cuts in certain areas this year that are going to be just have major human tragedies. And we're looking at doing other good things too, but we don't have the money for it. So I was inquiring if you had any place to fund it that wouldn't require that kind of trade-off.
Mm-hmm. And my remarks were nothing meant to finish what you're trying to accomplish. Because we've talked about this many times, and I strongly encourage what you're doing here. But just the money thing that always kind of Further, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, well, I'm just a couple thoughts here. The money, I certainly understand the money issue. I hope we can take this thought and even take it farther than just studying and just having some data out there and maybe somebody's master thesis. I hope there is an end game to this, and that is zeroing in on what we have going for us in the state. And I, well, last week or so, I mentioned when the Bioscience Governor's Bioscience Council was first started in 2003, the first project was to figure out the inventory, what we had in the state, what we had going for us. And that was just a wonderful project because we have so many great businesses that we can help facilitate and grow, and this is what Senator Saltzman and myself and many around this table work on. So let's think beyond just a study and a thesis and make sure that there's some action out of the results here. And just something to what Senator Latz was saying, it about how people are coming into the state. That might be true, but when you are a community that sits on the border, there is this constant battle back and forth of jobs, and it doesn't take much for them to just fly over the border because it really doesn't matter. So our real challenge here is to make sure that when we're creating jobs, that they don't fly over Greater Minnesota and land in the Twin Cities. Because when I was elected 8 years ago, I remember talking about how the Twin Cities was going to grow by 1 million people in the next 10 years. Well, we're almost there. Now, I don't think you want this whole influx of people up here, and things are drying up out in Greater Minnesota. So let's not have that flyover. Let's think about how we can make it a win-win for the entire state. And then from that point, how do we get our higher ed community engaged in our curriculum? Get down even farther, and this is, I'm really opening up the conversation, to our K-12 and earmarking those kids at an earlier date and giving them that window of opportunity, what's out there, and then start teaching them through the sciences and math curriculum, and hopefully they'll stay around and they won't have to come up here for a job. That's my speech about Greater Minnesota.
That's good. One Minnesota. How are you doing, David?
So I do have, I believe, the amendment, Mr. Chair, if we wanted to vote on the amendment with the changes to the numbers and the states and the numbers and the study. So,
what you want to do? Move on the amendment? On the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill. If you got the money thing in there, I suppose you got to go to finance. And right. Further discussion. All those in favor of the Saltzman motion to approve the bill and forward it to the finance committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you very much. You have one more?
I do, Mr. Chair. This is the fun one. And if Mr. Bryan and Mr. Houchild would come up and join me, that would be wonderful. This is Senate File 3014, Mr. Chair. And last week we heard from the Science and Technology Economic Development Project Committee. And they brought forward a wonderful study. Mr. Mallon was here and speaking to that. And there was a lot of great thought put into this and some discussion of where we're at, where do we need to go. I felt there was, you know, some excellent work done. And there were a number of recommendations. And one of them was to create a permanent structure that is going to be able to really take leadership on driving forward a science and also technology economic development strategy for the state. And that was sort of a big move. And so we met as a committee, a small group of us met, and it was Representative Mahoney and myself, and talked with some of the members of the group of what legislation might look like in moving something forward, the idea of a commission, this idea of North Star Rising. And so the bill in front of you is a very beginning and first step of trying to create some sort of authority that would have be able to drive leadership between the academic sector, the private business sector, the nonprofit sector, which encompasses some of our organizations with nanotechnology, the Biobusiness Alliance, Life Science Alley, with also our public sector and labor, to begin to have those conversations that all these bills we've heard today talking about having a comprehensive plan. Now, some things we've talked about have been little pieces of that. But this is to start to create that governance model. And for those of you who sit on transportation, we have all these debates about design build. And I think of this as sort of a design build project in that we could sit here and study this whole thing for another year and talk about what kind of structure are we going to have. And I'm not sure we'll ever get it right on paper, but to be able to pull out some of the things that are working really well for us now and giving them a little bit more freedom and also pulling them aside so they have sort of the spotlight on them and being able to drive this by, again, bringing in the people who are on the front line. Now, the way the bill is written now, it is written as an authority, and we modeled it after the Public Facilities Authority, that it's made up of five commissioners at this point in time. And we talked about how to have the high-level management folks involved with this. And because it is an authority, and because it would have responsibility and could also be involved with financial decisions, they would have to go through financial disclosure. And that may prevent some people from serving. And so we would like to continue to work on this bill so that we have this authority, but we also have a high-level commission or advisory commission to this group that is really driving a lot of these decisions that would be made up of the CEOs of major businesses, both large and small, of having people from the University of Minnesota, not only a high-level executive like Dr. Mulcahy, but also involving perhaps some faculty from the research sector, from MinSCU, from the Mayo Clinic, being able to really be involved in where are we using our resources, what kind of policies do we have, and then also having an advisory council that would be able to include people who are on the front line. The bill has been put out as a starting point for those discussions and gathering information. I know it has several more stops to really be able to define this, but my greatest concern is that we have this wonderful report that everyone is wringing their hands over, but what are we going to do? Are we going to put it on the shelf and think about it and study it some more? Or in this very trying economic times, and we keep hearing about, we've got great things going on in our state. Don't get me wrong. How do we continue to make sure things do go well and that we build on those areas that, have the most promise? So this is what this bill does. It also, we looked at the Office of Science and also Technology, which is INDEED, and that's been something that the Senate has really, always had strong support for, and that the good things that are going on there that we hear is using that department and moving it into this authority as a starting point. This bill at this point is moving money over to that authority from DEED, and there certainly is a need. The original report asked for an appropriation of $500,000, and we've had a lot of talks about discussion, about money here, and it's going to be very difficult perhaps to find that, but is there a way for us, again, to leverage private dollars to keep this authority moving forward and that they can make recommendations in this coming budget year in 2011 of how we need to structure this and how this authority could be helpful in driving an economic development plan. So I have Mr. Ryan here and Mr. Hauschild, who maybe could just share a little bit about their experience on this committee and a little bit more about why they think it's important that we not shelve this report, but we begin to find a way to plant the seed to create this freestanding authority commission or body to really drive economic development in these areas.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
State your name for the record, please.
My name's Pat Ryan. I live in St. Paul. I work for Seagate Technology in Bloomington. And I have, for the last 4 years, I've been chairman of the board for MinNano and co-founder for MinNano, which is a private sector advocacy group based in Minneapolis.
Just go on.
We have been working on some, I guess I would call economic development issues for the state, some recognized needs. We've been, especially MinNano, just as a matter of history, MinNano started an initiative back in 2007 on economic impact for science and technology in the state. And back in 2008, we got together with MHTA and the Life Science Alley folks to discuss this need a little bit further. And back in August of 2008, that we began a little effort called the North Star Rising effort, which resulted in some legislation last year that was enacted in the DEED organization and resulted in our science and technology initiative. That is the this report is the outcome of. During that that effort, and I'm sure you've heard most of this, so I'm just going to reiterate it, just briefly, it has been recognized that even though Minnesota is in, you know, it's not in a terrible position with respect to science and technology, that over the last 5 years it has slipped its position in science and technology in many various metrics that any of the other reports that you find that we researched actually showed. And I would say a lot of that has been, it was also recognized by this study that there is a very unique lack of science and technology leadership in the state of Minnesota. There is no one at the state level that you can address for science and technology needs. There is, that can help drive policy for the state of Minnesota. And if you look at models for science and technology initiatives across the U.S., the kinds of models that Senator Saltzman has put forward here are models that are working today and are delivering economic benefits to states such as even Michigan, for that matter. But more importantly, Massachusetts and Ohio. And we believe, as a part of the outcome of this work, that there's not only a need for this in the state because of these measured slips, but there's also there's a huge opportunity in the state of Minnesota for some of the emergent areas in science and technology, and that this could be a huge benefit economically to the state. It was the intent of I served on this science and technology team or committee before Christmas. There indeed could be developed within a year's time, with some help and guidance from the state of Minnesota, a commission for science and technology in Minnesota. It could be developed by some, by the efforts of the team, by an extension of the efforts of the team, and by virtue of funding some small amount of administrative dollars. I think the one of the biggest burdens to the state in terms of science and technology is that many of these efforts require long-term and kind of visionary thinking. Science and technology doesn't develop over a two-year biennium, and it and if it's a slave to the two-year biennium, it's going to be hugely stressed to actually develop anything meaningful. And that was one of the probably, if not one of the key outcomes of our study. So you know, I'm here to kind of advocate for the need of this. I think the governor's study in 2008 out of Arizona, our own governor was co-chair of that committee, voiced this this exact need for not just the state of Minnesota, but for throughout the U.S.
Good. Sure. Welcome.
My name is Todd Hauschult, and I'm representing the Minnesota High Tech Association, which is an association of 350 Minnesota-based high technology companies. And as my colleague Pat Ryan was saying, that yeah, Minnesota is sliding in the statistics over time. We looked really hard as a group from 2002 to 2009 what has been happening, and Minnesota is slipping in several categories, as you heard when we read the report to you last week. And do encourage you, in the appendix, there's a lot of data, but you really can pull out some very, very clear points on that. We looked at what other states were doing during the sliding. We looked over 30 states. We couldn't get to all 50. There were 17 or 18 of us from the private sector who volunteered hundreds of hours of our time to help with this commission. So the report was very, as Senator Metzen was saying, a way to do it without spending a lot of money. And we came back with this. And as we look at that guidance, why is science and technology so important to us? Well, the science and technology jobs pay relatively 69% more than the average private sector jobs. So they're higher paying jobs and drive a lot of the economy, and that's why we're focusing in on this. And one thing that we noticed in the best practice of these other states is they all had a commission and a comprehensive plan either, you know, already in place or in development. And we didn't have that in Minnesota. And I come from the private sector, and you know, we'll always say, you know, without a goal, without a plan, any road will get you there. So we thought that there are a lot of great things going on with broadband infrastructure, trying to stimulate the economy, getting jobs, federal funds, but there is really no coordination or consolidation of this to make sure that we can put these in concert and do this in a smart, you know, business-oriented, practical manner. So that was the overriding response by this group of individuals that was there, constantly saying, where are we going? What are we doing? We need to get our efforts coordinated. Otherwise, a lot of these efforts will be left on the table. And that's why putting this commission together, we thought was very critical. A commission that will last beyond the biennium, that will be nonpartisan, that will have public-private partnership in doing this together. So that's why we thought that was the best first step.
Call it an authority, right? Not a commission. Authority.
On that point, Mr. Chair, when we were talking with staff about, you know, commission versus authority, and if this group, as at some point, has some authority for disbursement of funds that would be appropriated to them, that the authority seemed to be a better way to structure it. We're working on that. We're, you know, putting some ideas out there. Again, to be a little bold, because it would be very easy to suggest, well, we just keep thinking about this, studying it, recommending things. And the thought was that in talking with the folks who put their time in this smaller group, to just study this for another year would feel like, didn't we just do that? What else do you want from us? And so, again, where can we start to create a focus, a center for this to begin? And authority is where, you know, the way the bill is written now, we are seeking input, we're talking to folks, and again, to be able to engage the high profile corporate leaders in this, we need to find a way that's going to work for them to be involved. And they've certainly given a great commitment so far to the working group, to have the Mayo Clinic at the table, to have Dr. Mulcahy from U of M, Gail Kane from MinSCU, to have other corporate leaders there who are sitting next to me. It was really great to see their commitment. But how do we continue to not just talk about it, but start to do some programming, to be able to look at how do we actually begin to coordinate these programs, because that seems to be part of the issue of being able to see what everyone's doing and really put a focus on science and technology.
Well, I think if you want to get there, you need a roadmap and a comprehensive plan, and if we just get the shotgun approach, it seems to me you're on the right track here. And what I like, you're going to keep the executive director or the person we have now kind of doing this, going to keep her on, and which I think is good,
right,
personally. But
right.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saltzman, have you considered whether or not there are any available funds from other places? For example, is there any ability to take advantage of any federal money that's going towards similar initiatives?
Right. On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonham, absolutely. I mean, that would be some of the areas. And we've heard, you know, privately, some groups have said, you know, they may be very interested in supporting something like this if they see it has potential. And so I think that's why we've looked at how do we pull something out, and that is no reflection on deed at all. This is no reflection, again, of we're going to do this. It's to be able to give it some greater visibility and also to be a little bit more flexible and proactive and being able to be more responsive perhaps. But again, we have a staff person now working on this. To give them this job and a whole bunch of other stuff is going to be very difficult. So we have to be very careful that as it grows, again, it's sort of a design build project of having this authority, if that's what it ends up being, able to work for the next, you know, 6 to 8 months, being able to perhaps then generate some private dollars or other investments to be able to grow it and to come back then with recommendations is now that we've got it started, what is the best way to grow this initiative? What other programs seem to might fit within this authority? So absolutely, those are all excellent ideas.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think you're on to something here. Does it have to go a couple more stops, I guess? If you need money, it's one. We know that.
Right. I think, Mr. Chair, that right now
it goes
to state and local.
Okay. Is that all right? Senator Saltzman will move that the bill be passed and forwarded to the state and local government committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Good. You had a heavy, heavy, heavy duty today, Senator Saltzman. Good,
yeah,
good work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have
two good
bills
work
to go this afternoon. So,
meeting's adjourned. When do we meet again? Thursday or Wednesday? Wednesday.
Good. I'm sorry.
Who said Thursday?